feel like every hot take on LeBron James that could ever be uttered was uttered yesterday. Yeah, good, bad.
I saw people just soiling themselves
about
this
yesterday. And they're not wrong.
I think everybody had fairly measured opinions about it. But, you know, you heard the term Nepo baby thrown out 100%. A lot. And I don't know that you can... I don't know that you can deny that, right? Is that would you'd be foolish to say this is not nepotism?
If it was Bronny Smith and he had just finished his first season at USC and, you know, averaged 4.5 points per game in, you know, 18 minutes, there's no chance he'd even be coming out for the NBA draft.
Correct.
But that his name isn't Bronny Smith. It's Bronny James. And pedigree is a real thing.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, you can't completely ignore that. He has access to the greatest basketball player possibly on the planet.
Sure.
Certainly one of the top three greatest that have ever lived. He has the unqualified 100% support of the greatest player ever. Now, you know, Michael Jordan's kids didn't turn into Michael Jordan, and it doesn't always follow that just because he's related to LeBron James, he's going to be anything like him. In fact, it would be almost impossible to be there.
Not almost. It is. He's not going to be LeBron James, right?
He was a very highly touted high school prospect with
top 20 I think, with, in the country.
With some really good, you know, possibilities ahead of him. Has he reached them? Of course not. He's still probably multiple years away from even coming close to that, especially after the cardiac arrest, you know, setback that he had to go through. When it comes to the, you know, players running the team aspect of it, that is also 100% true. Not every player, in fact, almost no players in the league would have the cachet or the authority to even engineer this to happen. They wouldn't even have the temerity to ask for it. You know, yeah, my son's in college as well. We should draft him. Well, you know, did he have a good season? Well, he's coming off the bench for a sub-500 team, and, you know, didn't make the NCAA tournament. The obvious answer, of course, is going to be no. We're not going to use even a second-round draft pick on someone like that.
Yeah.
However, it's also assumed that I think when people are going, you shouldn't let LeBron make these decisions, LeBron is not only a great basketball player, he's also very savvy and smart about the game of basketball. There's no reason to think that LeBron doesn't know as much or more than Rob Pelinka or Jeannie Buss or anyone. There's no magic in it. There's no magic in knowing what's the best for the team. He probably does. And is it selfish? Is it self-serving?
Rob Pelinka, anytime they ever get into a debate, and he goes, "Oh, really, Rob? How many NBA Finals have you played?"
Right. And if I'm Jeannie Buss, I'm the owner of the Lakers. I feel like he could do worse than just listen to what LeBron James wants and say, "You know what? That's how I'm going to run my organization. I'm going to give full faith to my superstar, who's brought me a title, who has been a great ambassador for my organization. I want him to be a Laker for life, you know, the rest of his career. And then after his career, I want him to represent my colors. And if having his son on the team is a way to ensure that for a good chunk of time to the future, it's probably well worth the 55th overall pick in the draft just to make that statement to LeBron James that you are the most important person in our franchise right now and will be going forward." I'm okay with that.
I'm going to need Adam Klug to put Bo and Taylor on the payroll here ASAP, just so you know. It's coming. The ask is coming. Michael, if you're listening, going to have some different demands at the next contract negotiation.
97 Tweed a fan. Who's this?
97 Tweed.
I see the Laker haters in the chat. I hope this ruins the lame curse.
Well, the lame curse.
There's not much to ruin right now.
No.
They are in a transition period. That's going to be painful, just like it was when Showtime ended, just like it was when, you know, the Shaq, Kobe, Pau Gasol era ended for a while. There's going to be a painful transition coming up.
Right.
I would rather have LeBron James on my side during that painful transition than, you know, perhaps making an enemy of him or driving him to a different organization. That's my two cents as it... Admittedly, Lakers fan and, you know, Lakers part of the Lakers family growing up. My two cents on that is I'm okay with how this played out. I really am. Do I think that LeBron and Bronny James are going to win a title here? No, of course not.
You would have been pissed if the Lakers traded up to five and drafted him early in the first round or something.
It actually worked out perfect for him. 55th pick in the draft.
Pretty happy with who they got in the first round. Guy who fell from the lottery to them.
Who can help
Dalton Connect, the SEC player of the year from Tennessee.
Nice.
It'll be a bigger story when he's actually on their opening day roster, because there will be a better NBA-ready player in their system.
Yeah, I mean, and somebody made the point yesterday, so will LeBron be okay if he's not on the opening day roster and he's playing in the G League? I don't really think LeBron has a choice, and I think that would help kind of calm things down a little bit if, in fact, he's not ready to contribute. You say, oh, we're going to go play in the G Leagues for a while.
And I think LeBron, honestly, probably would be okay with that.
100%.
He's not coming back to play the opening week and then retire just because he wanted to play with Bronny for one game.
Like, yeah, if he's insisting that Bronny needs to be in the starting lineup from day one so they can play together, then we do have a problem.
Yeah. All right. This is way too much basketball talk.
All right. Yes. We need a contestant for Take on Woods. Join us right now. 833-288-0973. One of those days when the Padres don't have a game, it does draw your attention to some different things that you wouldn't necessarily pay attention to. Watch some of the soccer game yesterday, USA against Panama.
Oh, man. All right, so I need you to explain to me, what is this tournament?
So the Copa America is basically like the championship of North America and South America. It's for the non-World Cup even years. So the World Cup is every 4 years, like the Olympics, and then in the middle year between, they do the Euro, which is going on right now, and they're doing the Copa America, which is like our version of the Euro.
Okay.
It's a country, like an international, represent your country, just like World. It's basically the World Cup teams, but instead of playing against the world, you're just playing against your region to crown kind of an interim champion in between World Cups. But it's a pretty big deal in soccer. It's your biggest tournament you're going to have between World Cups for international play.
But this result doesn't affect anything in the World Cup or for the Olympics or anything like that, right?
It's its own tournament.
Just its own tourney. Okay.
Cool. But I mean, this is what you've been preparing for the last 2 years, essentially, for. The next 2 years will be for preparing for the next World Cup. But the last 2 years, ever since you got eliminated from the World Cup, you're like, okay, we're retooling team, whatever, with the eye on the next Copa America in a couple of years. So this is big.
Okay.
And if they don't advance out of group play, which, if they lose on Monday to Uruguay, who's the best team in their pool, so they very well could lose, it's going to go down as a pretty epic failure.
Another one.
You know, you should definitely be getting out of at least the group round into the knockout stage. So this will be considered a failure. A lot of people are excited about that. They'll feel like maybe you can change coaches before it's too late.
Greg
Berhalter is not the right guy for this team.
Not like that guy. I see many tweets about Greg Berhalter. Yeah, and I did see the red card that was given out yesterday, and Berhalter was not pleased about that, talking about a silly mistake. Man,
Tim Weah, especially early in the match,
and yeah, when we flipped it on, it said, you know, playing with 10 or man down or whatever, and I said, oh my god, how do you get a red card there? And then the 50-50 ball, Ben, between one of their guys and our goalkeeper, that looked like a free safety hitting a guy.
The thing is, it's you have to know when you're playing Panama, you know, international soccer people will say they're pretty dirty team.
Yeah.
And that's part of their strategy. They know, hey, we're Panama. We're not exactly the elite of the elite when it comes to world soccer. So how are we going to get under the skin? I mean, that Panama had like six times more fouls than the United States. They're going to play rough. They're going to play dirty. And they're going to try to get in your head and get you to make a mistake.
They did.
That perhaps they can take advantage of, and it played out perfectly. Their strategy played out perfectly against the United States. You can't let an inferior team dictate and get in your head and make you play the wrong way.
Yeah,
and that seems like what happened in that
game. That's such a gnarly thing, by the way. Like, imagine if you argued with like Bryce Harper goes out and chews out an umpire, and they're like, boom, red card. You're out.
8-on-9.
8-on-9. You have to slide somebody over. Like in adult league, when only 8 guys show up, you're like, we'll go 2 outfielders. I need you to slide from short to second on this lefty. Like, Now that makes baseball. That
would
interesting.
Be that would be so funny. Two players ejected. Okay, we're now 7-9.
We have 7
the
guys
rest of the game.
One outfielder out there. Like, oh, yeah,
you'd probably see a lot less.
3 infielders, 2 outfielders. How are we going to do this the rest of the game?
You'd see a lot less, a lot fewer bench clearing brawls.
You'd see a lot, and you'd see a lot fewer jawing at the umpires too. If you knew that I could get run, red carded, and I'm out, and we can't replace me. Auto out in the lineup. Holy smokes.
We still need a contestant for Take on Woods. Got to be someone out there who wants to try to qualify for that fantastic trip to Las Vegas. 833-288-0973. Please call right now. 833-288-0973. Got Don't Do This coming up. We got some audio at 7:30, as you said. Mark DeRosa on MLB Network talking about the San Diego Padres. We'll get to the pitching matchups for this upcoming series as well. And then it's a Friar Friday, which means at 9 o'clock, Mike Shildt will join us from Boston, Massachusetts, as the Padres get ready to take on the Red Sox. Did you tell me that Jesse Agler has never called a game at Fenway Park before? I didn't hear him say that.
Yeah, Jesse Agler told us yesterday in his newsletter that this will be his first time broadcasting at Fenway Park, which for a broadcaster, I mean, that's like... It's like one of the meccas, you know. You think about Wrigley Field, you think about Fenway Park, and getting to do that. And he's pretty fired up, man. And that'll be tonight. We can be able to watch him on Apple TV. We can remember, Ben, you told us yesterday how to do it.
Go to the audio settings and switch it to the 97.3 Padres home radio feed, and it'll be synced up for you when you watch the game tonight on Apple TV.
I'm so happy for him, man. He's been in this game a long time, and to never get a chance to go do that is pretty special.
All right, got some people calling in for the game. Let's get to it. It is time to play Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods.
All right, let's go to line two here. Who's on the air here? Caller, you're up for Take on Woods. Who's this?
Hello, this is Thomas.
Thomas! All right, you're in. Thank you for calling. Woods has left the studio. So we've got 5 questions of musical trivia, and if you beat or tie Woods, we'll put you into the drawing for our 2-night stay at the Fontainebleau, tickets to Hootie and the Blowfish or Smashing Pumpkins, and the $150 poolside dining credit. Get your rooms and summer packages at FontainebleauLasVegas.com. By the way, Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car for directions and discounts. Go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. All right, Thomas, here are your categories. We got Keep the Change, song titles that include a type of coin in the name. We got You're Making Me Crazy, 5 song titles that include the word crazy. And we've got a Bob Marley category today. So Keep the Change, You're Making Me Crazy, or Bob Marley. Thomas, what would you like to play?
Let's go with Bob.
All right, Bob Marley. He's going right to our new category today. Yeah, today's category all about reggae legend Bob Marley. 5 questions, 60 seconds. If you don't know an answer, you can pass. First questions are 2-second song. Obviously, it's going to be a Bob Marley song, so you just need to give me the title on that one to score the point. We'll go on from there. Pass. If you don't know, again, you can come back if there's time left on the clock. Thomas, you ready to play?
Absolutely.
All right, 60 seconds on the clock in the category Bob Marley. Thomas, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
Don't worry.
It's not what that song is called, but good try. Which 1965 song not only became the first international hit for Bob Marley, but the title would become a worldwide mantra on T-shirts, tattoos, and bumper stickers?
No Woman, No Cry?
Incorrect. The live version of which Bob Marley classic ranks number 37 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time. Writing credit was given to Marley's friend Vincent Ford, who used royalties to fund his soup kitchen. Bob Marley was a prominent member of which Afro-Jamaican religious and social movement that involves the ritualized smoking of ganja, a.k.a. cannabis?
Rastafari?
That is correct. Eric Clapton's cover version of which 1973 Bob Marley song reached number 1 on the charts in 1974 and landed in the Grammy Hall of Fame?
Oh, man, that was 5 years before I was born. I got
to
pass.
All right, go back to you see, now if you had said No Woman, No Cry for the third question, that would have been correct. You only got the one, though. Three Little Birds is the title of Don't Worry, it says what it's called, by Bob Marley and the Wailers. One Love is the mantra. T-shirts, Hannah Nancarrow tattoos, bumper stickers, Rastafarianism, you got that. And I Shot the Sheriff is the Eric Clapton cover of Bob Marley. I don't know if it's going to be enough, Thomas. I do appreciate your attempt, but see how Woods does. I'm anticipating he'll do well in this category. We'll see.
Don't jinx me.
60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Thomas.
It's Bob Marley. What's the name? Three Little Birds.
Correct. Which 1965 song not only became the first international hit for Bob Marley, but the title would become a worldwide mantra on T-shirts, tattoos, and bumper stickers?
One Love?
Correct. The live version of which Bob Marley classic ranks number 37 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time. Writing credit was given to Marley's friend Vincent Ford, who used royalties to fund his soup kitchen.
Pass.
Bob Marley was a prominent member of which Afro-Jamaican religious and social movement that involved the ritualized smoking of ganja, a.k.a. cannabis?
I'm blanking like a madman. Rasta.
Correct. Eric Clapton's cover version of which...
I Shot the Sheriff.
Correct. The live version of which Bob Marley classic ranks number 37 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time.
Redemption Song.
That is incorrect. He's got four, which is good enough for the 4-1 win today.
I got three.
You got three.
You got three.
Yeah.
He didn't get No Woman, No Cry.
What else did you get? Missed that one.
Oh, you didn't get I Shot the Sheriff?
I got that one.
You got Rasta. You got Three Little Birds. You got One Love. You got four.
I got four.
No Woman, No Cry was the...
love that song.
...was the middle one. But Bob Marley category goes to Woods today.
Might get lucky tonight.
Thomas, thank you for playing. We'll have some new categories. Ganja, a.k.a. week. Cannabis.
What a drop. Let me hear it again. That's so good.
Ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
That's fantastic.
There's something inaccurate
about what I said? No, not at all. It's just...
Big bomba class, big bomba tsunami.
For those people who weren't sure what ganja was, I just wanted to be...
A.k.a. cannabis.
Also ganja, a.k.a. as, cannabis.
Also known as...
Weed.
Weed.
Smoke.
Pot. Grass. Lettuce.
Hippie lettuce.
I was going to just devil's lettuce.
With ganja.
Ganja.
But it's the a.k.a.
Ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
Sounds like Alex Trebek is what it's... Ganja, a.k.a.
cannabis. I am hosting a game show. I should sound like Alex Trebek in this scenario.
God, that's one of my favorite drops of all time.
Hannah Nancarrow says, I trained him for this category.
Did. Oh, God.
That's a GD1.
That is unbelievable.
Ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
That's a one seed. God, that kills me. What was the name of the category?
Bob Marley.
Oh, okay. Somebody said I thought you would do it, Jamaica Me Crazy or something like that.
Bob Marley. Don't Do This is coming up next. Could the NFL be taken down by a group of class action lawyers? Did you see
what went
down yesterday? Yeah. Big ruling against the NFL. We'll get to that and more coming up after a check of traffic. Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't Do This.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This is brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sereno Valley. Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thekrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today. Thekrafttaco.com. So, it sometimes feels, and it's probably true, that the NFL is all-powerful. They can do what they want.
Yeah, it feels that way.
They have us all in their grasp. What else are we going to do on Sundays in the fall?
And other than Mondays and Thursdays.
Other than watch football. Everyone else does it.
Some Fridays, some Saturdays.
Yeah. You feel like you're missing out if you don't. It's pretty much taking its, I mean, TV ratings, the top 100 programs every year now are NFL football games.
Yep.
So you have to watch. We know this. And you don't have any alternatives. There's no competition to the NFL in the fall. The UFL does not count. There's just no competition. But an industrious group of plaintiffs and lawyers said, you know what that is? That's a monopoly. When there's no competition and then you start charging whatever you want for your product, that's a monopoly. Those are illegal in this country. So they filed a lawsuit. It started actually with a sports bar up in Northern California going, because, you know, sports bars have to pay way more for Sunday ticket than even home customers.
Bro, I think that...
I had
a buddy that owned a bar, and he goes, if you had any idea what we have to pay to get this in.
And it ain't exactly cheap for home customers either. I mean, you know, it's... You're already paying for cable and everything to get most of the games, but if you want all of them, that's another... You know, what is it, $140, $50 for the season for Sunday ticket? Whatever it was, at least. So, many years ago, actually... They filed this lawsuit against the NFL going, you're overcharging for your Sunday ticket. And it was thrown out, and then it was reinstated. I mean, the NFL has lawyers upon lawyers upon lawyers who delayed, who tried to get every trick in the book, legal trick, to win this case. But kept moving forward and eventually got to trial this week. Roger Goodell was called to the stand. Jury was there listening to all the arguments. And they came back with a verdict yesterday. And that jury in U.S. District of Court said, yeah, you have violated antitrust laws. And they ordered the NFL to pay $4.7 billion in damages to Sunday ticket subscribers and sports bars who have been paying.
Wow.
Now, this is antitrust, which means that judgment will be likely tripled to over $14 billion, which would mean every team would be on the hook for about $500 million each.
I was going to ask, is there an NFL pot, like an NFL fund that comes out of, or does the owners
each
team?
I don't think there's any pot that's worth $14 billion.
Right.
Yeah, but if it's tripled, it would be $14 billion.
Oh, my.
So they just split it up 32 ways?
So obviously it's not over. There's going to be appeals upon appeals. We're probably still years away. But if the NFL does lose, at some point, if you bought Sunday ticket between, I think it was like 2011 and 2022, during this case, you'll get one of those like postcards in the mail saying, yeah, I'd like to sign up for my settlement.
Yeah, fill this out.
And if it all works out, one day you may get like a check for $150 or something, like to compensate you for your overpaying of the years of Sunday ticket or whatever it is. Your slice of the pie, of the big settlement from the NFL. So, hey, they don't win every single battle.
That's free
apparently.
Money right there, guys.
They lost one, finally.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing
I've never fulfilled one of those.
I have.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I've gotten my $22 check for
like
whatever.
$40 from Blockbuster.
I got like $9 one
yeah.
time.
That's
like, sweet.
It's like found money. It's great. I've never been.
You're
able
always
to...
worried it's a scam, though. First,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Did I actually sign up for this? Yeah, I guess I did. Whatever.
I've never been able to. You know me. I'm quick to pull the trigger on almost anything that costs money for entertainment purposes, and I've never been able to pull the trigger on the NFL ticket. Never been able to say, "All right, let me have it all," because I just don't. You know what I mean? The red zone and all that is enough for me, and then whatever games are on the networks, I'm good to go. Mine is pretty lame, and we're kind of out of time, Benny. Just do your do this.
All right, do this for a Friday.
Mega do.
I just saw this morning. So they're hosting the U.S. Senior Open right now in Rhode Island. Second round play is underway. And I don't know who Frank Bensel is. Never heard of him before. Probably just qualified for the U.S. Senior Open like he can do for the regular U.S. Open. They're playing at Newport Country Club, which starts with a par 5. He parred it. Then he bogeyed the next hole, which is a par 4, and parred the third hole, which is a par 4. So he's one over through three. Both the fourth and fifth holes, kind of unique on the course, back-to-back par 3s, 184 and then 203 yards. U.S. Open, even for the seniors, tough course. Fourth hole, Frank Bensel, ace. Fifth hole, Frank Bensel, ace.
Back-to-back. Back-to-back hole in
one. I don't even know what the odds of that are in golf. But that has to be one of the most astronomically unlikely things to happen in sports. There are very few courses where you even have back-to-back par threes.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
A hole-in-one will happen once in every, you know, several years on, you know, for a player even of those caliber on a course like that. To do it on back-to-back holes, one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in sports.
No question. If I did it, I still would break 100 that day. That's the worst.
Start with two.
Yeah,
you have 16 holes left. Yeah, can I keep it under 100?
Yeah.
Not on a U.S. Open course,
yeah,
you couldn't.
The day I got my hole-in-one, I shot 111. A 111 with a hole-in-one. Nice day.
Congratulations, Frank Bensel. And that's Don't and Do This for a Friday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Mathematician Seabass in the chat says 1 in 67 million.
Oh, my.
I don't know. That seems a little light, even to me. You got to realize, you probably get one or two chances in your life, other than like on a, you know, executive par three course,
yeah,
to play back-to-back par threes. On a regulation course, you're never going to get back-to-back par threes almost.
No.
To get them both as hole-in-ones? Insane.
It's awesome.
Insane.
What a day. So you have to buy drinks for 2 days for, ooh, all the people there?
Good question.
You know,
double,
I mean,
the drinks for one day,
yeah,
drinks for two straight days.
It's expensive. It gets pricey.
Just pay for everyone's hotel room,
yeah,
for the,
right,
weekend or something.
Everyone's rental car.
Everyone's going to Vegas on me.
Crazy.
That is nuts. He then bogeyed the next hole.
Nope. His hands were shaking, obviously.
1-1-5.
So good.
All right, we'll come back. The Padres are winning over, I don't know if they're winning over their own fan base or their local media yet. We're always going to be a little skeptical. National media, though, they seem to be jumping on, yeah, board with the San Diego Padres again. Give you some of those comments when we return on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Padres aren't the only playoff contender going through some injury issues,
ooh,
obviously.
Big one last night.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it, but the Phillies potentially lost two key players yesterday. They're crossing their fingers, holding their breath after Bryce Harper suffered what appeared to be a hamstring injury at the end of,
yep,
the loss to the Miami Marlins.
Last play of the game.
Yeah, very end of the game. And then Kyle Schwarber also dealing with groin tightness. You know, groin tightness doesn't sound bad, but that's basically what kept Yu Darvish out for the last month plus. So two absolutely core players for the Philadelphia Phillies now potentially could miss some time. We'll get an update, I'm sure, on both of their statuses coming up. But we know the Dodgers have had tons of injury issues so far this season. The Braves have had massive. I mean, they've lost Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna Jr., and others. But just start with those two. Absolutely key players. So, yeah, the Padres have dealt with their fair share of injuries, no doubt about it. But they are not the only one. The National League is is a walking wounded league at the moment.
When you live in the vacuum, you know, the silo, as Mike Schilt likes to call it, we live in the Padres silo. I saw the highlights last night. Now I saw Harper running down to first, kind of a shot back in the hole, and second baseman's going to it, first baseman's running to the bag. As soon as he hits the bag, Benny, he reaches for his hammy, and he starts jumping up and down. Carlos Correa, did you see that last night? Oh my
God. Did not see Carlos Correa last night.
God, he's up hitting, gets drilled in the forearm, does this, holds his hand up and looks to the dugout and shakes his head. Nope, 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 walks off the field. So, yeah, man, guys are getting banged.
Even the Brewers, who the Padres just faced, remember, you didn't see Devin Williams in that series.
Thank God.
You know, everyone's been beat up this year, especially in the National League. So, Padres, you know, it may come down to how role players perform on all of these teams. And the Padres have had really, really good contributions from role players. We'll talk a little bit about where they stand right now, midway point of the season, right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So, again, I realize power rankings are meaningless other than a little snapshot of how, you know, some group of national media are feeling about certain teams at a certain moment. But yesterday, Padres were a season high number 12 in ESPN's new power rankings. Doesn't really matter. Other than I do think it's sometimes interesting to see some of the comments, because guys like Buster Olney, who wrote the write-up on the Padres, do have access to at least talk to other people in the league about their impressions of a team. And here's what they wrote about the San Diego Padres yesterday. The National League mud bog of wildcard contenders is for now a messy race of 10 teams vying for two spots. You can make a reasonable case for each of the clubs, including the Nationals, but interestingly, many executives echo a similar sentiment as they assess what they see. The Padres should be the best team in this group of wildcard wannabes. Quote, "There's just a talent there," one high-ranking official said of San Diego last week. "They've got starting rotation problems, but with the quality of their position players, they should win a spot." And then here's the one. Here's the statement that caught my eye. "Nobody can hit, but the Padres can hit." That's what another executive in baseball, when he looks at the Padres, goes, "Yeah, they got something there. We're all struggling to put runs on the board. We're all struggling to put the bat on the ball, get it in play." But not the Padres. They lead the league in batting average. They're hitting line drives. They're striking out very little.
Yeah.
And for whatever, I mean, is it turning into a massive number of wins? Of course not.
No.
They're barely above 500. But it's something that has the envy of at least some people out there when they look, "I wish my lineup did more of what the San Diego Padres lineup has been doing this season."
Got to keep that rolling, man. Got to keep that rolling. That slug that you're experiencing now, guys hitting homers, and you're going to be, I don't know how the Texas Rangers ballpark plays at all. Like, I don't know if it's deemed a pitcher's park, hitter's park. You know, I know that there's a dome over it because it's 140 degrees there right now, but I don't know how it plays. But I know Fenway Park is a good park to hit in. So hopefully the boys can go out and you know, do some damage off the monster this weekend. And, yeah, I mean, look, they're a good team. They got their work cut out for them. But, yeah, I'm feeling pretty okay about this team, and I've felt that way, what, 16 times or so this season? Like, okay, yeah, right. Like, what a flash of brilliance this has been. And then the inevitable has happened. I'm just trying to avoid the inevitable losing four or five games on this road trip. And I think it's the specter that hangs over all of our heads as Padres fans, because that's what we've seen to this point.
So, but what's truly remarkable is that the Padres are envied as an offense after a first half in which what? Xander Bogaerts was a complete zero offensively and then got hurt. Manny Machado had his worst half season of his career offensively. And Fernando Tatis Jr. had a good 2.5 week period in June, was finally heating up when he then got hurt. Your three most important offensive players.
Well, Ha-Sung Kim, who had a good offensive season last year, has also
taken a step back. There's just no way the Padres should be better offensively. They should be significantly worse, yet they are better. And it is for a number of reasons. You know, Jake Cronenworth's bounce back.
Yep.
Luis Arraez's addition, certainly part of it.
And Jackson,
Jackson Merrill is huge. But the number one reason the Padres have taken a step up offensively is the most unlikely reason of all. Now, so the guy who unblocked us on Twitter in spring training, it is Jurickson Profar. And I don't really even know how much credit to give A.J. Preller for that move. It was such a foregone, obvious conclusion move. Even before the Padres signed him, we were already counting on him as part of whatever Padres plans. Now,
I remember those conversations. Yeah. We're like, all right, you got Toddy and Wright
just
over the offseason. You got Toddy and Wright. Big question mark in center field. And
Sugar?
Then he's not on the team yet, but you figure Profar and
Love.
No, I don't know if he's an everyday player, but you know, he'll be a good platoon switch hitting option, you know, come off the bench, whatever. Obviously they're going to sign Jurickson Profar, and he's going to be on this team in 2024.
Yeah.
It was a foregone conclusion in my mind that Profar was going to be here. So I don't know that can be like a huge, AJ Preller needs to be general manager of the year for his incredible signing of Jurickson Profar. Everybody would have done that. You know, you could have had no GM, and somehow Jurickson Profar would have ended up on the team one way or another this year. So I give all the credit to Jurickson, and, well, maybe a little bit to Fernando Tatis Sr.
Yes.
And whatever he did to Jurickson during winter ball in the Dominican.
Yeah. And I think playing, you know, he talked about it. Getting a chance to play winter ball was epic for him and got him locked in. And guy's been ready to play, fighting through injury. He's been a revelation, man. Couldn't love somebody more than Jurickson Profar. What a great, great dude. What a great pickup for almost no money.
He did officially finish first in the NL All-Star balloting in the outfield.
It's done?
Well, the first round is done.
God.
So he is now one of the six finalists. So you now have to go back and start voting for Jurickson again beginning Sunday. Sunday to Wednesday is the final vote, MLB.com/vote.
Why do they do this?
I know. I mean, it would be a crime at this point if Jurickson finished first in the balloting normally and then all of a sudden like finished
falls
fourth
off,
and
right.
didn't get there. So, you know, follow up, everybody that voted for Jurickson. You got to do it one more time. Sunday to Wednesday, the final vote is coming up. Jurickson needs to be an all-star this year.
All right, we got to make sure we hit it on all our socials and spread the message because, there's no more deserving candidate than him.
Padres have four finalists, actually. Tatis is also one of the top six. Now, I would assume that even if he got voted in, he's not going to play in the All-Star
Correct.
Game. You know, there's not any indication that he'll probably be back before the All-Star break. And even if he was thinking of coming back, the All-Star game is not the place to come back. So I would not think that Fernando will be part of the team. Manny Machado is one of the two finalists at third base. And Luis Arraez is one of the finalists at second base. He actually nearly passed Ketel Marte, who had a really good first half of the season for the Diamondbacks and was the leading vote getter. But you can change your mind. You can go for the batting champion. You can vote for Luis Arraez. There's a 50-50 chance he could end up being the starter at second base for the National League in Texas next month at the All-Star Game. So those are your options coming up. Your last four Padres you can vote for, and then, of course, they'll name the pitchers. Roberts is still very much on track to be part of the bullpen for the National League as well. And Jackson Merrill did not make the final six. That doesn't mean you can't be voted in by players or be selected by the manager later on, but he's no longer part of the fan vote going forward.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sick, though, if he made it, too. But he said he doesn't care. He just wants to, you know, he just wants to win baseball games at this point.
All right, let's get a quick update. We've had a couple of times this week. We had our friend John Flint on from KSON down the hall. And it is the final day, and they've done an incredible job this week. And it's not too late to help them reach their goal. I know it was a very lofty and ambitious goal as they try to raise enough money to train a service dog for a veteran who's come back suffering from PTSD. Johnny, it's good to see you again.
Guys, thank you so much for giving me the time. I wanted to go ahead and just clear up any misconception right off the bat of what people think about this show. It smells really good in the
studio.
It does
smell good.
You guys are tremendously good smelling men.
That's the ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
Yeah, you missed that.
Did you guys get high in
we
here
did
this
not.
Morning?
We did not. No, we had a Bob Marley category for take on
ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you again. We had a very lofty goal, Ben, of $35,000, and that goal wasn't just something we just picked out of the air. That's what it costs for Paws for Purple Hearts, this beautiful organization here in San Diego, to train one service dog. It takes about 2.5 years to train a dog to help save a service member's life, and we're about $18,000 right now, which is a
Not
big
bad.
Step from yesterday.
Get a smaller dog, or maybe a partially trained dog.
Half trained.
No, let's get them to their goal today, everybody. Let's get them all the way there.
When did you become the joker of the show? What's happened here? Anyway, yeah, let's be honest. We're tired, and I know that you're probably tired of people asking you for money in America's most expensive city. But these are men and women who did their job for us, and we have the freedoms that we have today. You know that because of them, and so many of them would rather die than tell you that they're hurting. Would rather die than ask for help, because that's not how they were bred. That's not how their insides work. But they helped us so much, and this is our way of the civilian way of helping out and doing your part for your country. I don't care if you don't listen to our show. I don't care if you don't like me. I don't care. What I do care is you go to KSON.com and just make that donation, because you're going to be helping a hero who might not be able to even say, I really need to help. I can't even get off my couch. I can't get the mail. I can't go to my kid's game because anyone who looks at me, I think they want to confront me. It's such a weird mindset, mental illness and post-traumatic stress. I thank God I can't wrap my mind around it. But I do know this, that these service animals are proven to help, if not save lives. So it's a huge deal, and it's people right here in San Diego that are going to benefit. KSON.com. Maybe today's payday. pay it forward a little bit. We need, I don't know, what is the math at this point? I can't even think. 17,000.
You're more than halfway there.
I know. Thank you
but,
for
you
that.
But, you know, usually these things, the late charge is what gets you to the finish line.
You know, if you fought for our country, thank you for your service. If you've got a son or a daughter right now who's overseas or doing something for our country, thank them for their service and pay them the respect and the honor that they deserve by helping out a veteran that is in a really rough place right now. Many of them, I mean, everybody knows somebody that served, and maybe you know somebody that suffers from traumatic post PTSD. As you can tell, I'm really tired, guys. It's been a long week, but I just thank you for the time again. At KSON.com is where you can go ahead and make that donation.
It is a noble cause, John, and we appreciate you spreading the message and doing that work this week.
So what's up with the All-Star break? I just caught the end. Who's in, who's not?
Jurickson is a finalist. Tatis is also a finalist, although he's not going to play. And
good.
Then Arise and Manny Machado are finalists, one of the two at their positions, second and third base. So you can vote for them Sunday to Wednesday. Let everybody on KSON know.
Sure.
Get the vote out, especially for Jurickson. Sunday to Wednesday, MLB.com/vote.
Maybe this has been brought up, and I apologize if it has. Shouldn't Jurickson and Profar accept the All-Star slot and then politely decline it so he can get that knee back? I mean,
no,
should he be playing in the All-Star
game? His son will never forgive him.
Kyrie
Profar wants to see his dad at the All-Star game.
He wants to see his dad in October, frankly.
I don't think 3 innings of All-Star and two at-bats.
He's
going to get him healthy either way.
I'm concerned. I apologize.
I appreciate that.
Okay, KSON.com. Thank you. Love you. Big tier one.
Thank you, Johnny. Appreciate you.
Get him to that full-size dog today.
Yes, the full-size.
By donating at KSON.com. All right, we'll come back. We got Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue talking about the Grand Ole Game. Thanks to Grand Ole Barbecue. That is coming up next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Padres aren't the only playoff contender going through some injury issues, obviously.
Big one last night.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it, but the Phillies potentially lost two key players yesterday. They're crossing their fingers, holding their breath after Bryce Harper suffered what appeared to be a hamstring injury at the end of a loss to the Miami Marlins.
Last play of the game.
Yeah, very end of the game. And then Kyle Schwarber also dealing with groin tightness. You know, groin tightness doesn't sound bad, but that's basically what kept Yu Darvish out for the last month plus. So two absolutely core players for the Philadelphia Phillies now potentially could miss some time. We'll get an update, I'm sure, on both of their statuses coming up. But we know the Dodgers have had tons of injury issues so far this season. The Braves have had massive. I mean, they've lost Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna Jr., and others. But just start with those two. Absolutely key players. So, yeah, the Padres have dealt with their fair share of injuries, no doubt about it. But they are not the only one. The National League is is a walking wounded league at the moment.
When you live in the vacuum, you know, the silo, as Mike Schilt likes to call it, we live in the Padres silo. I saw the highlights last night. And I saw Harper running down to first, kind of a shot back in the hole, and second baseman's going to it, first baseman's running to the bag. As soon as he hits the bag, Benny, he reaches for his hammy, and he starts jumping up and down. Carlos Correa, did you see that last night? Oh, my
God. Did not see Carlos Correa last night.
God, he's up hitting, gets drilled in the forearm, does this, holds his hand up, and looks to the dugout and shakes his head. Nope, 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 walks off the field. So, yeah, man, guys are getting banged up right now.
Even the Brewers, who the Padres just faced, remember, you didn't see Devin Williams in that series.
Thank God.
You know, everyone's been beat up this year, especially in the National League. So, Padres, you know, it may come down to how role players perform on all of these teams. And the Padres have had really, really good contributions from role players. We'll talk a little bit about where they stand right now, midway point of the season, right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So, again, I realize power rankings are meaningless other than a little snapshot of how, you know, some group of national media are feeling about certain teams at a certain moment. But yesterday, Padres were a season high number 12 in ESPN's new power rankings. Doesn't really matter. Other than I do think it's sometimes interesting to see some of the comments, because guys like Buster Olney, who wrote the write up on the Padres, do have access to at least talk to other people in the league about their impressions of a team. And here's what they wrote about the San Diego Padres yesterday. The National League mud bog of wildcard contenders is for now a messy race of 10 teams vying for two spots. You can make a reasonable case for each of the clubs, including the Nationals, but interestingly, many executives echo a similar sentiment as they assess what they see. The Padres should be the best team in this group of wildcard wannabes. Quote, "There's just a talent there," one high-ranking official said of San Diego last week. "They've got starting rotation problems, but with the quality of their position players, they should win a spot." And then here's the one, here's the statement that caught my eye. "Nobody can hit, but the Padres can hit." That's what another executive in baseball, when he looks at the Padres, goes, "Yeah, they got something there. We're all struggling to put runs on the board. We're all struggling to put the bat on the ball, get it in play. But not the Padres. They lead the league in batting average. They're hitting line drives. They're striking out very little."
Yeah.
And for whatever, I mean, is it turning into a massive number of wins? Of course not.
No.
They're barely above 500. But it's something that has the envy of at least some people out there when they look, "I wish my lineup did more of what the San Diego Padres lineup has been doing this season."
Got to keep that rolling, man. Got to keep that rolling. That slug that you're experiencing now, guys hitting homers, and you're going to be, I don't know how the Texas Rangers ballpark plays at all. Like, I don't know if it's deemed a pitcher's park, hitter's park. You know, I know that there's a dome over it because it's 140 degrees there right now, but I don't know how it plays. But I know Fenway Park is a good park to hit in. So hopefully the boys can go out and you know, do some damage off the monster this weekend. And, yeah, I mean, look, they're a good team. They got their work cut out for them. But, yeah, I'm feeling pretty okay about this team, and I've felt that way, what, 16 times or so this season? Like, okay, yeah, right. Like, what a flash of brilliance this has been. And then the inevitable has happened. I'm just trying to avoid the inevitable losing four or five games on this road trip. And I think it's the specter that hangs over all of our heads as Padres fans, because that's what we've seen to this point.
So, but what's truly remarkable is that the Padres are envied as an offense after a first half in which, what, Xander Bogaerts was a complete zero offensively and then got hurt. Manny Machado had his worst half season of his career offensively. And Fernando Tatis Jr. had a good 2.5 week period in June, was finally heating up when he then got hurt. Your three most important offensive players.
Well, Ha-Sung Kim, who had a good offensive season last year, has also
taken a step back. There's just no way the Padres should be better offensively. They should be significantly worse, yet they are better. And it is for a number of reasons. You know, Jake Cronenworth's bounce back.
Yep.
Luis Arraez's addition, certainly part of it.
And Jackson,
Jackson Merrill is huge. But the number one reason the Padres have taken a step up offensively is the most unlikely reason of all. Now, it's the guy who unblocked us on Twitter in spring training. It is Jurickson Profar. And I don't really even know how much credit to give A.J. Preller for that move. It was such a foregone, obvious conclusion move. Even before the Padres signed him, we were already counting on him as part of whatever Padres plans. Now,
I remember those conversations. Yeah. We're like, all right, you got Toddy and Wright.
Just when?
The offseason. You got Toddy and Wright. Big question mark in center field. And
Sugar?
Then he's not on the team yet, but you figure Profar and
Love.
Now I don't know if he's an everyday player, but you know, he'll be a good platoon switch hitting option, you know, come off the bench, whatever. Obviously they're going to sign Jurickson Profar, and he's going to be on this team in 2024.
Yeah.
It was a foregone conclusion in my mind that Profar was going to be here. So I don't know that can be like a huge, yeah, A.J. Preller needs to be general manager of the year for his incredible signing of Jurickson Profar. Everybody would have done that. You know, you could have had no GM, and somehow Jurickson Profar would have ended up on the team one way or another this year. So I give all the credit to Jurickson, and, well, maybe a little bit to Fernando Tatis Sr.
Yes.
And whatever he did to Jurickson during winter ball in the Dominican.
Yeah. And I think playing, you know, he talked about it. Getting a chance to play winter ball was epic for him, and got him locked in. And guy's been ready to play, fighting through injury. He's been a revelation, man. Couldn't love somebody more than Jurickson Profar. What a great dude. What a great pickup for almost no money.
He did officially finish first in the NL All-Star balloting in the outfield.
It's done?
The first round is done.
God.
So he is now one of the six finalists. So you now have to go back and start voting for Jurickson again beginning Sunday. Sunday to Wednesday is the final vote, MLB.com/vote.
Why do they do this?
I know. I mean, it would be a crime at this point if Jurickson finished first in the balloting normally and then all of a sudden like finished
falls
fourth
off,
and
right.
didn't get there. So, you know, follow up, everybody that voted for Jurickson. You got to do it one more time. Sunday to Wednesday, the final vote is coming up. Jurickson needs to be an all-star this year.
All right, we got to make sure we hit it on all our socials and spread the message because, yeah, that's, there's no more deserving candidate than him.
Padres have four finalists, actually. Tatis is also one of the top six. Now, I would assume that even if he got voted in, he's not going to play in the All-Star
Correct.
Game. You know, there's not any indication that he'll probably be back before the All-Star break. And even if he was thinking of coming back, the All-Star game is not the place to come back. So I would not think that Fernando will be part of the team. Manny Machado is one of the two finalists at third base. And Luis Arraez is one of the finalists at second base. He actually nearly passed Ketel Marte, who had a really good first half of the season for the Diamondbacks and was the leading vote getter. But you can change your mind. You can go for the batting champion. You can vote for Luis Arraez. There's a 50-50 chance he could end up being the starter at second base for the National League in Texas next month at the All-Star Game. So those are your options coming up. Your last four Padres you can vote for, and then, of course, they'll name the pitchers. Roberts is still very much on track to be part of the bullpen for the National League as well. And Jackson Merrill did not make the final six. That doesn't mean you can't be voted in by players or be selected by the manager later on, but he's no longer part of the fan vote going forward.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sick, though, if he made it too. But he said he doesn't care. He just wants to, you know, he just wants to win baseball games at this point.
All right, let's get a quick update. We've had a couple of times this week. We had our friend John Flint on from KSON down the hall. And it is the final day, and they've done an incredible job this week. And it's not too late to help them reach their goal. I know it was a very lofty and ambitious goal as they try to raise enough money to train a service dog for a veteran who's come back suffering from PTSD. Johnny, it's good to see you again.
Guys, thank you so much for giving me the time. I wanted to go ahead and just clear up any misconception right off the bat of what people think about this show. It smells really good in the
studio.
It does
smell you good.
You guys are tremendously good smelling men.
That's the ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
Yeah, you missed that.
Did you guys get high in
we
here
did
this
not.
Morning?
We did not. No, we had a Bob Marley category for take on.
Ganja, a.k.a. cannabis.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you again. We had a very lofty goal, Ben, of $35,000, and that goal wasn't just something we just picked out of the air. That's what it costs for Paws for Purple Hearts, this beautiful organization here in San Diego, to train one service dog. It takes about 2.5 years to train a dog to help save a service member's life, and we're about $18,000 right now, which is a
Not
big
bad.
Step from yesterday.
Get a smaller dog, or maybe a partially trained dog.
Half trained.
No, let's get them to their goal today, everybody. Let's get them all the way there.
When did you become the joker of the show? What's happened here? Anyway, yeah, let's be honest. We're tired, and I know that you're probably tired of people asking you for money in America's most expensive city. But these are men and women who did their job for us, and we have the freedoms that we have today. You know that because of them, and so many of them would rather die than tell you that they're hurting. Would rather die than ask for help, because that's not how they were bred. That's not how their insides work. But they helped us so much, and this is our way of the civilian way of helping out and doing your part for your country. I don't care if you don't listen to our show. I don't care if you don't like me. I don't care. What I do care is you go to KSON.com and just make that donation, because you're going to be helping a hero who might not be able to even say, I really need to help. I can't even get off my couch. I can't get the mail. I can't go to my kid's game because anyone who looks at me, I think they want to confront me. It's such a weird mindset, mental illness and post-traumatic stress. I thank God I can't wrap my mind around it. But I do know this, that these service animals are proven to help, if not save lives. So it's a huge deal, and it's people right here in San Diego that are going to benefit. KSON.com. It may be today's payday. pay it forward a little bit. We need, I don't know, what is the math at this point? I can't even think. 17,000.
You're more than halfway there.
I know. Thank you
but,
for
you
that.
But, you know, usually these things, the end, a lot
the late
of
charge.
Like the late charge is what gets you to the finish line.
You know, if you fought for our country, thank you for your service. If you've got a son or a daughter right now who's overseas or doing something for our country, thank them for their service and pay them the respect and the honor that they deserve by helping out a veteran that is in a really rough place right now. Many of them, I mean, everybody knows somebody that served, and maybe you know somebody that suffers from traumatic post PTSD. As you can tell, I'm really tired, guys. It's been a long week, but I just thank you for the time again. At KSON.com is where you can go ahead and make that donation.
It is a noble cause, John, and we appreciate you spreading the message and doing that work this week.
So what's up with the All-Star break? I just caught the end. Who's in, who's not?
Jurickson is a finalist. Tatis is also a finalist, although he's not going to play.
And good.
Then, Arise and Manny Machado are finalists, one of the two at their positions, second and third base. So you can vote for them Sunday to Wednesday. Let everybody on KSON know.
Sure.
Get the vote out, especially for Jurickson. Sunday to Wednesday, MLB.com/vote.
Maybe this has been brought up, and I apologize if it has. Is there a... Shouldn't Jurickson and Profar accept the All-Star slot and then politely decline it so he can get that knee back? I mean,
no,
should he be playing in the All-Star
game? Son will never forgive
his son will never forgive
Kyrie
him.
Profar wants to see his dad at the All-Star game.
Well, I'd like
he
to
wants
see,
to go to that
I'd
home
like
run
to see his dad in October, frankly.
I don't think three innings of All-Star and you know, two at-bats.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Give him
he's
one
He's going to get him healthy either way.
Sorry,
so
I'm concerned. I apologize.
I appreciate that.
Okay, KSON.com. Thank you. Love you. Big
Thank
tier
you,
one.
Johnny. Appreciate
Let's
you.
Get him to that full-size dog today.
Yes, the full-size.
By donating at KSON.com. All right, we'll come back. We got Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue talking about the Grand Ole Game. Thanks to Grand Ole Barbecue. That is coming up next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.